I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to KSL Outdoors Radio. Nice to have you with us again here for a Saturday morning. If you've listened to this program for any period of time, you've heard several guests of ours and friends of ours that have taken trips to the Wind River Range and just rage about the experience that they had there. We've even had satellite phone calls, although it was a little sketchy getting out of some of those places up in the winds here on the show and tried to do it live on Saturday mornings. And it's one thing when people make a visit out, even, you know, if they spend a significant time in the outdoors and come back with the trip of a lifetime comment. But when somebody like Adam Eagle tells me that this ranks right up there in some of his top trips ever, you're talking about a guy that spends most days in the outdoors and actually gets paid to be there. But he joins me live to talk about it because on his program, KSL Outdoors Television, which airs this week, every weekend actually on KSL TV, but this week we'll be focusing on that Wind River trip. I thought it'd be fun to get a little preview of what's coming up. What is it about the Wind Rivers, Adam, that makes it so special?
You know, Tim, I think a lot of it is, I think it's the fishing for most people. I know it is for me, at least. That's what I was always thinking of when I thought of the Wind Rivers. This is my first trip going up there, and so I was pretty excited to just go up there and fish. And, of course, you know, everybody wants to go up there and catch the golden trout. We didn't do that on our trip, but we caught some amazing fish. And I think it's I think it's for a lot of people, it's the fishing. And, you know, in the wildlife up there, there's elk and deer and, you know, the potential of running into a grizzly bear. I think that has a lot of people pretty excited. It did me.
Yeah, it's such a remote area. And I remember a report, and you may have even been involved with this years ago, when Doug Miller did a show on it. And he, I think, horse-packed in, but he talked a lot about the golden trout, obviously. But it's such a remote area. 40 named peaks over 13,000 feet, the highest peak in Wyoming at 13,800 feet. I didn't realize until I started looking into it that seven of the largest glaciers in the Rocky Mountains are found in there.
Yeah, I didn't either. In fact, that's part of my quiz question.
Oh, shoot, I just gave it away.
No, that's fine. But, I didn't either. I didn't realize how long they were either. I mean, they're 100 miles long, you know, along the Continental Divide there. And so I was really impressed. I was impressed, too, but how sawtooth the peaks were. You know, everybody looks at the Teton and goes, wow, those are so cool. And they are. The Tetons are cool. But the winds are just so much more spectacular. They have, they run for so long. You get up on top and you just look left to right. And it's, you know, 20 miles each way of these huge sawtooth peaks. It was pretty spectacular. I'll tell you, I was real excited. We were on a mule pack string trip in. We went in about 15 miles, and some really neat people from Utah County took us in. Bob and Wade and the big crew that we had. We had 15 people and 25 mules total. So we had a big crew going up. I actually jumped in my mule across the creek, fell off, broke a rib, have a broken finger.
Oh, no, that's not supposed to happen.
I know, but it was so much fun. Broke a rib, broke a finger. I was one of three guys to get tossed on that trip. We had one guy, 76-year-old guy, really nice guy, took a big old spill, landed on his head, popped right back up, said, let's go. And then everybody's looking at me, and I'm over there limping around because I've got this broken rib. And They're like, he's gone, just popped right back up. What's your problem?
Well, as long as you don't puncture a lung, I guess you're all right. But that's a painful way to spend some days out anywhere, yeah. Let alone out there in the middle of the wilderness. Next time, do what a buddy of ours, Charlie Jennings, did and leave the mules at home. Just take the pack goats. That seems to be a better way to get in.
Yeah,
of course, you can't ride. You can't ride those guys, though.
Yeah, you can't ride. I'll tell you what, when you have a broken rib, you don't want to ride anything. But luckily, we were on gated mules with some of Bill's mules out of the Rocky Mountain Mule Company, and they were amazing. They have a really nice, steady, even gait, and so it made going out actually pretty enjoyable. So I'd highly recommend it. You know, we went in through the big sandy trailhead. There's a lot of different places you can go in. There's outfitters you can take. These guys, we were just lucky enough to get invited. This is something they do once or twice a year. They just decided to invite us to go along and document, and it was pretty cool. I'll tell you what, though, the mosquitoes up there are about as big as Cessnas. they're pretty nasty, but it was a really cool experience. We had some really tough rain and a little bit of hail, but man, I want to go back. I want to go back when I don't have broken ribs. But the worst part was I fell off the mule on the way in.
Oh no!
So we were like 13 miles in. I fall off, and so I was sore for 3 days. I couldn't even get back on a mule. I thought I was going to have to walk out of there. But every day, everybody would load up. They'd head off to different lakes, try some different fishing. Caught some lake trout, caught some brook trout, lots of beautiful brook trout. I mean, gosh, they were just gorgeous. But
is that the way most people do it? You just find a sort of a base camp area and then explore from there?
That's kind of the idea I got. Yeah, there's a lot of different trailheads going in. We passed up probably four or five lakes that would have been just beautiful to camp at. But now we had to go clear over the top of this over the top of this drainage into another drainage and ended up camping by Upper Silver Lake, I believe it was called. And there's so many different options. And what I think what's really cool about the winds is the variety, of different places you can go. Obviously I think it's called the Cirque, where a lot of climbers go up and tackle some of the rocky, jagged cliffs. There's that up there. So we didn't see too many people in the area. We went because they like to get away from people, and so I think we only saw maybe five or six different hikers in our whole 6 days we were there. There's a lot of different options you can do.
They call it the Cirque of the Towers. You've answered one of my
questions. Cirque of the Towers, yeah.
Yeah, you've answered one of my questions about what your access point was, but it does sound like for anybody that, would like to explore this as an option for an adventure down the road, that there are many different trailheads you can take. I read up that there's about 600 miles of trails that really can get you just about anywhere you want to go in there.
Yeah, and we didn't see any other outfitters, but I know there's a bunch of outfitters out of Pinedale that offer trips for people to go in there if you're looking to do, a drop camp. I know I've got buddies that hunted and have done some drop camps at the base of the winds, and so there's quite a few options. The big sandy trailhead where we went in was a huge trailhead. I mean, there must have been 40 cars parked there at the bottom. But again, like I said, they all went to the Cirque de Towers and over into that area. We went kind of the opposite way and kind of stayed a little bit more to the northwest, and then we came into a valley and we just had the whole place to ourselves. Wow. It was amazing.
Is this the kind of thing that people should be leery of doing themselves if they've never done it before? Is it obviously better to do it with an outfitter?
Yeah, I don't know. I would say if you have experience, say, going into the Uintas, I would say most people, as long as you have, the right gear as far as backpacking, if that's the case, and had some bear spray, I would say most people. I'd feel comfortable going back in, taking my family in. I think most people that they have a little bit of experience in the backcountry, they'd be fine. Good GPS and just the appropriate gear to handle some rain and some potentially even snow that, you never know up at that elevation. You might even get snow in the middle of the summer. So, I would think most people, like I said, if they had a little gumption, a little tough grit, They'd probably be okay. That's kind of what this trip was all about, too. These people, they're all just good friends, and they just like going up. I think fishing was more an excuse for these people to get up there and do this, and they like to test themselves. You would not believe how much gear we brought in. I mean, I think I told you we had, you know, about 25 mules. We had 8 or 9 or 10 mules that had 300 pounds a piece on them when we went in. We had bacon and eggs and steak and pork and, I mean, canvas tents. These guys were not roughing it, that's for sure.
You just picked the wrong one, evidently.
I've done a little on horseback and mules, but not that much. I just need to hold on a little better. My saddle slipped a little bit. So,
oh no,
man! I just ended up flying off. So.
Well, there are 1,300 name lakes in the Wind Rivers, and I was a little surprised you talked about the brook trout, but I was a little surprised to find out that Mackinac even made the list.
You know, I was too. I honestly was too, and. We caught a couple. A couple of the guys caught a couple of nice macks. I was doing a little research on that. I guess the old cowboys back in the day, they would fill milk cartons, you know, milk jugs, and they'd load them up on, load up little fingerlings in these milk jugs and haul them up into the winds. And that's why there's so many different varieties of fish up there from, you know, hybrid cutthroat to Mackinac to brook trout to, you know, obviously goldens and the Wyoming Game and Fish obviously just keeps stocking them now, you know, where they can, but it's pretty spectacular. I was kind of thrown by that too when people were saying, the one guy came back and said, I caught a lake trout, and I was like, you got a what?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, it was a lake trout.
Yeah. Sounds like there was some cowboy bucket biology going on back in history somewhere.
Yeah, I think there was.
Tell everybody what to expect this week and next, and when to find you on Channel 5.
Yeah, most importantly, we'll probably, for this couple-week show, we're going to highlight this group. I mean, they were such a unique party. Had a great time. I mean, characters. These are Utah County friends of ours now, just Utah County cowboys that just enjoy doing this. And so we're going to highlight what they do. We'll do a little fishing. It's going to air this weekend, the 1st, August 1st and August 8th. We'll just kind of highlight the trip, talk about some of the scenery, and show you the big rainstorm we got in, some of the fish we catch. It's going to air 9:30 and midnight on KSL Outdoors Channel 5 this Saturday and next. I'm pretty excited to talk about it. So.
Always look forward to your reports and love the storytelling as well. Adam Eichel, thank you so much, sir.
Hey, thanks, Tim.
We will take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk more fishing. We'll check in with Navidomskis and have your Fish Bites report coming up next, so don't go away.
A gun in the face.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
Started 2 years of horror for an American in Venezuela.
They said, you need to give us your phone and get ready because you're coming with us.
I'm Becky Bruce, and I spent a year researching and piecing together Josh and Tammy Holt's story about their ordeal in a notorious prison.
That's when everything started to turn bad. We had another pound on the door. Boom, boom, boom. And there was the police once again.
You can binge all of the episodes of Hope and Darkness on KSLpodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Navidomskis has been saying that for years, by the way.
Yes, absolutely.
When it comes
100%, and I'm not being patronistic, I'm being legit.
When it comes to fly fishing in particular, because the women just have that little finesse. They can actually present the fly better than the men can.
You know, there's a lot more than that. The reasoning is I've watched for a long time, and they do have that Obi-Wan Kenobi understanding. They feel things better than men do.
More patient.
I don't know about patience. I don't believe in patience. You know, it's not Mark. I think you should be catching a fish on every cast, and I mean that. But what the ladies do is they pay attention in class. They actually do what you ask them to do. And the men, they get to figure it out for themselves because they know more than you.
Yeah. How did the research go last week? You probably still aren't going to tell us where you were, but it looks like you caught some fish anyway.
Yeah. We floated a couple sections. That's a way to cover more water. And I'm old. I hate walking. I got bad knees. I caught 35 on top. I didn't fish underneath because I knew what they wanted underneath. I was researching on the top. Mickey got 70.
Gee.
The first day, yeah. I only got 17 the second day. We went a little higher in the river, and the hoppers hadn't reached there yet. So a little slower, but the fish were significant. And, you know, I didn't have my camera. The only photo I have there was my wife. Just when we started, she had a phone, and she took those two pictures of me, and that's all I had. The boys got lots of photos, and they say they're going to send them to me, but I'm still waiting.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad. And by the way, when we say doing research, it's because you've got a class that you're going to be taking up there to do some fishing. Speaking of classes, I want to make sure before we totally run out of time that we get another plug-in for people that may want to be a part of your fall class that's coming up.
Yeah, you know, we're still working on the COVID techniques, but it's filling rapidly. Everybody wants to fish, and it makes perfect sense. You can't go to the movies. You want to get out on the water and heal yourself, and that's the best thing to do is fly fish. So it's wildtrouts.com if you go online, WILDTROUTS. It's actually Wild Trout Safaris, but nobody can spell safari. So just send me an email, wildtrouts.com. My email is wildtrouts@AOL.com. And then I'll get you in the class. They're already half full. We start in September. We have a 23rd and 22nd of September class, a Tuesday and a Wednesday evening. We go 5 nights in classroom, and then we have about 3 days on the river where we, you know, put the strategies we taught in the classroom to work, and then you get confident, and then hopefully you're skunk-proof, and you will be, well, it'll change your life, and I'm not being audacious when I say that. I mean that. People have fly fishing as something that they possess, as an ability, and it gives to them what they need in the way of health. I'm talking physically and mentally. And they just enjoy it, and they never stop doing it, even until old age.
Yeah. In the time we have left, I love following you and your boys, not just, you know, when we're going skiing or fishing.
Yeah, yeah.
But, I mean, on social media, and I noticed something that Mickey posted this week, and he's such a smart kid, and, of course, he learned what he knows from his dad, but probably even knows a few things dad didn't.
He does.
When it comes to fishing this time of year, I enjoyed what he put on, I think it was Instagram this week, where he was talking about water temperature and the fact that in the West, you know, trout endure warm water and at a certain point stressing them in our silly sticks is simply unethical. And he was talking about, you know, find something else to do or find a colder stream to fish on just to let the fish heal here. What an important message.
Yeah, I read that too. It's quite eloquent, actually, the way he wrote that. But he's true about the species. Brown trout, for whatever reason, are way tolerant. You could beat those guys up. They don't give up. But our cuts are a prized possession, and they're related to the rainbow, and they don't handle these temperatures that we have. So what I was going to give with fish bites was got to get to the high country. Get to the mountain streams, and don't ridicule the fish because they're not large, because they have a small feeding season. But, you know, a 15-inch cutthroat on a lightweight rod is a blast. And, by the way, get out of these temps. So, yeah, kind of give a rest to the warm water, to the fisheries you're normally fishing. Because fish are still going to eat because they're hungry. And then they really can't tolerate the fight because they can't resuscitate themselves because when the water is warm, there's a lot less oxygen.
Yeah.
And so some of them will give up the ghost because they can't cope with being deprived of the oxygen they need. So he was right. You need to give them a rest. Get to cold water where the oxygen levels are still high And we don't want to decimate our fisheries, or we love these fish and we want to do whatever we can to keep them.
Yeah.
And so protect them. It's our responsibility.
And the temperature you put out there, and not like anybody's going to show up and, you know, test the temperature of the water when they arrive, but it's 65 degrees, which I'm going to guess, particularly over the next 4 or 5 days, we're going to be well above that in many spots. So head to some cold water options. Mickey suggested high alpine, tailwaters, places like that. Or maybe go after some warm water species.
Yeah, exactly. You nailed it, Tim. We're headed, like I say, in 30 minutes here. I'm going up above 8,000 feet. Because those little streams we have all over the West, and people say, where do you go? Every single drainage in the West has a little stream at the bottom, and it's loaded. It's loaded with cold water fish, cuts, brooks. They're a blast, and you wear shorts, and you have fun, and you get out of the heat, and it's healthy.
All right, there's your Fish Bites for another week. Stand by. Coming up after the top of the hour, Raelynn Takeda is back with us from the Division of Wildlife Resources. We talked about getting yourself ready for the archery season. Hunter education is something that needs to be happening right now if you plan on getting out on the hunt. So we'll talk to her next after ABC News at the top of the hour. Don't go away. If you don't like it, you can.